Well, hello. Good to see everyone this morning. And this is today, we've been doing this series called The Good Shepherd, where we've looked, at least in part, at the 23rd Psalm, a scripture that a lot of us really hold dear. The older I get, the more I appreciate these words. And today's our last one. Today we're going to be looking at it just a little bit. And as I was thinking about it, right after like our last message, I had this experience where I was feeling really, really empty. And I thought of the words, and these words almost seem like a taunt from the 23rd Psalm. But the part about you anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. And I was thinking, man, I just don't feel like I'm overflowing. I feel empty. What's going on? What's wrong with me? And again, as I was thinking of it, it almost felt like a taunt because I felt like I'm doing everything right. I'm giving all that I can. I'm praying. There was no like obvious sin in my life that I was thinking is just taking me down. But what's the deal with me just feeling completely empty? Now, anybody who's a Christian for any length of time know that there are just times where you get empty. And a lot of times I just, why am I feeling like this? And I've been thinking about this whole series that we've done. And one of the observations that we talked about from a neuroscience is that when we're maybe afraid, when we're experiencing negative emotions, maybe when we feel empty, it's not necessarily a sign of failure, but it's a cry for connection. As one neuroscientist observed, maybe the key is when we're really down, like in the valley of the shadow of death, or just feeling empty or feeling anxious, afraid, is that what we really need, it's a cry for connection with an attuned and compassionate presence of someone else. So I've been thinking about that and that idea of needing that attuned, compassionate presence of someone else. Because I don't know about you, what your tendencies are, maybe when you're feeling empty or feeling afraid. Mine are more to flee. Like, I have fantasies sometimes of escaping and living out in the woods by myself or a mountain. Where, yeah, so Cora's with me, I like that. Like, hey, I just want to go disappear, be away from problems. I want to just throw the blanket up over my head and just be gone. Calgon, take me away. There's a few people who remember that. Most of you are like, what the world? That ages some of us, if you know what that means. But just those desires just to like get away, to be absent. But what if instead of that it's a really a counterintuitive to me cry for connection. And not just any presence. Because, you know, there are loads of times where you're with people, and it's usually because I'm with people, and maybe they've been really critical or really anxious, really frustrated, and it just, like, starts to weigh you down. So more of that's not going to help a lot of times. But an attuned, somebody who's with you, and a compassionate presence in those moments. Now, Jesus is way ahead of the curve on neuroscience. He understood it all because he was the Lord. And one of the things, one of his invitations, it's really well known and one that I turn to over and over. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. So even in those times of feeling weary, of feeling empty, my cup's not running over, my cup doesn't even have anything in it, it feels empty. That Jesus says, hey, if you're like that, if your cup's empty, if you're weary, if you're overwhelmed, if you're burdened, come to me, and I will give you rest. He's talking about that compassionate, attuned presence that he offers. Now, to my knowledge, the only place in the scriptures where Jesus describes what his heart is next is like is coming up next. Now, before we look at that, I want to think, if you had to describe what your heart is like with a couple of words, what words might you use? Because it's fascinating, again, the one place where Jesus talks about what his heart is like, the words that he uses. So we're going to go ahead and skip to that in, I think, verse 30. Come to me and I will give you rest. Or 29. For I am gentle and humble in heart. When Jesus is talking about what his heart is like, He used the word gentle and humble. Some translations say lowly. Now, does that sound like the kind of person you'd want to go to if you're stressed out, if you were empty, if you were anxious, overwhelmed, burdened? Somebody who's gentle and humble in heart. And I think part of my desire to escape or to run away is because I'm afraid I'm not going to get that kind of heart. You know, one that's gentle and humble. Because that's just not, and there's lots of days where I'm not able to offer that. I get that. But wow, what an invitation to think about, like, that compassionate, attuned presence that's saying, hey, come to me, I'm here for you, and I'm gentle and humble in heart. The Celtic Christians are a group of people that I really appreciate. We talk about them fairly often here. But they recognize this part and this thing that Jesus offers here of being gentle and humble. And they have this concept, recognizing that what people really need is an attuned, compassionate presence when they're anxious, when they're upset. And they have this concept called anamkara, which means soul friend. And what they're teaching is that everybody needs a soul friend. Everybody needs a safe person that they can go to, where when you're anxious, when you're afraid, when you're overwhelmed, when you're frustrated, that you can go to who's a attuned, compassionate presence. So they're these soul friends that a lot of times have been trained in Celtic Christianity who are trying to model the heart of Jesus with a heart that's gentle and humble. And fortunately for me, I have one. And I was able to go to this soul friend times when I was feeling really empty. I can say it's really a life-giving invitation that Jesus gives to come to him and see that. So as we think about that and the kind of presence Jesus is and the kind of people, because we talk a lot here about becoming disciples who are known for love or becoming more like Christ and letting him cultivate in our hearts. And gentleness isn't necessarily a virtue that our culture says is a great one, but it's how Jesus described his heart. Humble, again, that's probably countercultural, but it's the way of Jesus and the way that we're trying to follow here as a church. By the way, if you're here and you're not a Christian, we're thrilled that you're with us, and we hope you're blessed. But if we are Christians, we need to take seriously the heart of Christ and our hearts and what our hearts are doing. So I've got a question for you. This is a quiz. In the Bible, do you know who the first person was who had the honor of giving a name to God? This is one I just learned recently. I was really surprised. Hopefully it's true. I think it is. The first person in the Bible who had the honor of giving a name to God, it appears fairly early in the book of Genesis. And the person who first gives a name to God was not Abram, no? Oh, somebody knows it. This person was not an Israelite. I mean, the Bible traces the story of Israel, but the person is a foreigner, not an Israelite. This person was a woman, which again is very surprising, especially back in this time that it was a woman, a foreigner. This was not Eve. This is a little bit later, but yeah, Eve. In the tradition, this person was maybe not even given a real name in the scriptures, but a title. Her name was Hagar. And Ha is like the, and Gar is like immigrant. So they were calling her by a title, almost by a property. And Hagar, again, she wasn't an Israelite. She was considered foreign, an immigrant. She was a victim of human trafficking. She knew what it was like to be used and abused. And it got so low for her at some point that she gets kind of trafficked out, gets pregnant, and the abuse continues, and it gets so bad that the only thing that she could think to do is do what I want to do and run away. And she ran out into the desert. Now, the desert, a desolate place where the temperatures, the environment's not great. It's not hospitable for anybody, let alone somebody who's very vulnerable. She was there as a woman by herself and pregnant. Doesn't get any more vulnerable than that in the desert. And so she sees us as a better alternative, and she escapes. She runs away. And then we have this great story that we have. So let's go to Genesis 16:7. This little sentence here that has so much meaning. The angel of the Lord found Hagar, near a spring in the desert. They found her at an oasis. Like, a spring in the desert is a big deal. So she was able to go out into the desert and find a spring. And it's there that the Lord appears to her, because she could have easily died, but there was some sort of, there's water out where you wouldn't expect it, even in the desolation. And that's where the Lord appears to her, where she comes across this spring in the desert. And there's a lot that happens here with her and the angel of the Lord gives her some encouragement and sends her back with a promise, and she's ready to go back. But then she says this in Genesis 16:13. She says, Hagar gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me, for she said, I have now seen the God who sees me. So in other words, she is the first person who gives a name to God. And she calls him El Roy, the God who sees me. El Roy. She experienced God as a God who saw her, a God who was gentle and humble in heart and came to the vulnerable. As we think about it, there's probably times when maybe you've felt your cup filled up and then maybe it's gone dry at other times. So we're going to leave Hagar here and go about 2,000 years later into the future. There's a woman, again, who has a very unlikely encounter. And she's going out to the well at noon. This was a time that was hot. This was a time when other people didn't go because it was not the ideal time to go to a well in the heat of noonday. And as she goes out there, she encounters something very surprising again, a man. Now, she was even isolated in her community. We find out from the context, there were lots of reasons why she was an outsider. But she encounters a Jewish man, and Jews and Samaritans were natural enemies. Jews saw Samaritans as people who had compromised, people who had gone the wrong way. They were the people who were represented what was evil and idolatrous. And so Jews and Samaritans didn't interact, let alone Jewish men and Samaritan women, let alone Samaritan women who had trouble with even other Samaritans, because she was a person who'd been used and abused and mistreated and knew what it was like to be isolated and have to go away. And as she encounters this Jewish man, again, it's Jesus, and she experiences something really weird. And so this guy, like, looking away and not making eye contact or being really uncomfortable, he talks to her. He looks at her. He's a person who sees her. And he talks and he asks for some water. Now, this stunned her. So there are so many things about this that were so surprising after Jesus asked for a drink. And then she's wondering about it. And in John 4:10, they have this encounter. Jesus answered her. She's talking about, like, what about the, go get me a drink? What are you talking about? Jesus answers her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. So again, there's so much there that's confusing. She's surprised this guy's looking at her and treating her like a human. She's not used to that. The compassion, the gentle, humble presence of somebody who's attuned to her. And as they interact, she's also confused what he's talking about, living water. She thinks he's talking about H2O, the elemental water. But he says this, he's trying to teach her, and he says this in John 4:13. Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Jesus promises there's living water that can spring up in us. And there's part of me that answers or thinks, that sounds good. I wonder why so oftentimes I feel empty. Like, what is it that happens? Why do I feel empty sometimes? And I think one of the persons who speaks into this is this prophet that I feel a lot of kinship with named Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah knew what it was like to have nobody listen to him. And I'm not complaining about the church, by the way. But he knew what it was like to have a ministry where nobody listens and feel unsuccessful and be isolated and just want to go be by yourself and go do something else, and God just keeps calling you into something. But he says this. This is one of the unpopular messages that Jeremiah gives. This is from the Lord to the people of God, the people of Israel. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Over 20 years ago, Jenny and I were at a church near Covington, Indiana. And we had this really generous guy who offered us, there's this place called Tree Springs. And there's one house on Tree Springs, and this really generous guy, there's a picture of it. You could just, people around could just go and they could fill up their cups from the spring. So that it was owned by a guy who was a farmer, and he attended our church. And he said to us, hey, why don't you come? You can live out at Tree Springs for free. Now, it was a great offer. It was very generous, and we didn't do it. We decided not to go to Tree Springs. Now, this man's name was John Gardner. Fast forward 15 years later, we're at a church in Indianapolis. This one. This church. Spoiler alert. And I was talking to a guy who's a teacher named Dan Webb. Some of you know who Dan Webb is. And Dan Webb was a teacher who taught ag, taught some farmers. And he was going to meet one of his former students named John Gardner. The same one. I found out that this John Gardner had been taught by Dan Webb a long time ago. And here I was in Indianapolis. And I'm like, man, that's a blast from the past. What do you know? So I was reminded of him and that offer to live at Tree Springs because that was kind of fuzzy in my mind. It had been a long time. Well, recently, I was given some blood, doing the opposite of getting filled. I was getting drained. And believe it or not, the person who was there kind of supervising it, the phlebotomist, I looked at her name tag and it said True Blood. And I couldn't resist. I'm like, is your name really True Blood? Because that's like perfect for a phlebotomist. So we got to talking over that, and she told me her story, living in California and coming here. I'm like, well, why are you in Indiana then? Why'd you come to Indianapolis? She's like, well, when I was a kid, we moved around a lot, and there was this place that we lived that I just loved. It was near Covington, Indiana. Really? Where'd you live? She's like, well, you know what Covington is, you've probably heard of Tree Springs. We lived at that house. She was the person. Her family moved into that house right after Jenny and I had turned the generous offer down. So I was like, man, this Tree Springs thing, it just keeps following me, even in Indianapolis. So I was like, God, what are you trying to tell me through Tree Springs? And it felt like, as I was thinking about being a broken cistern or getting empty, it's almost like the Lord saying, hey, you have free access to a spring. You don't need to keep digging your own cisterns that don't hold water. Because for me, a lot of times when I'm feeling real empty, it's because I feel like I need something that probably I don't really need. It might be feeling like I need approval or validation. I might feeling like I need success or I need something else where I just feel empty. I feel like a disappointment. But it's like, no, those cisterns that you dig that you're counting on to fill you up, those are broken cisterns. They don't hold any water. But there is a spring. You've been offered it for free. Come to the spring and have life. Your own cisterns will not do it. Jeremiah had a couple of really interesting things to say about that I think similar to Tree Springs. He says this, cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh and whose heart turns away from the Lord. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert in a salt land where no one lives. And I think that that's what I do sometimes. I will go and I'll trust in myself or trust in some circumstances, and I'll try to draw my encouragement from something that's not really, it's flesh-based. So the Lord says that's like a desert. And then in contrast, Jeremiah said, blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord. So not just your circumstances, not just how things are going, but blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is not in circumstances, other people, flesh, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream. That sound like a tree spring? This is a tree plugged in with its roots by the stream. When you're like a tree planted by the stream, it does not fear when heat comes, Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. For me, that was like a metaphor, thinking of the Lord keep pointing me to these teachings from Jeremiah about you're blessed when you trust, when your confidence is in God, not in your circumstances, not in your own talents, not in that stuff, but when your confidence is truly in the Lord, the source of living water, when we go to that as the fountain instead of the other cisterns that we try and we hope will fill us up, and they just can't hold the water. There's a practice that I really appreciate. It's called the examine. And it was developed by a guy we call St. Ignatius. And one of the parts of the examine that I find fascinating is some of the language that they use as you reflect on your day. And there's the idea of evaluating on the times of desolation is the term. Maybe those times where you felt really empty. Maybe the times when you turned away from the Lord. Maybe just those times, again, the emptiness, the desolation, just like the desert, desolate. And then to reflect on the times of consolation. Consolation, the times when maybe you felt connected with God, or the times that things were going great, or the things, the blessings that happened that you're really grateful for. To remember the times of desolation, maybe turning away from, and consolation and turning to. And one way that can really help me is even with that word con. Con is with. Like that when we need consolation, we need someone else. I'm the kind of person, I try to find it myself, and it's not there. There's a consolation that we can experience. So consolation, desolation. And how as people, maybe when we're just down or empty, we need to find that attuned presence that's compassionate. Someone who's gentle and humble in heart, who maybe sees us, because he's the God who sees us as we are. Now, as we close out here, one more thing that Jesus said to those who are in need of being filled is this. And a lot of times, things that are really familiar, it's good to hear other translations, because Jeremiah talked about blessed are those who trust in the Lord, who put their confidence as a blessing. Jesus had a series of statements where he'd say, blessed are, he talked about the poor, those who mourn, the meek. But I love the language here. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. So if you're thirsty and hungry, if you feel a little empty, there's a blessing in here. And I want to use a translation that comes from the Bible Project, because I think it just captures it perfectly, captures what I really need so well. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for right relationships. And I think that's what we're really, that's when we're empty, that's what we really need, is right relationships, because they will be satisfied. And why this is translation is so helpful for somebody like me is because I think I can get to righteousness on my own. Like I can, if I just try hard enough, if I just do this, if I just have willpower. But this reminds me, it's about right relationships. Those are the things to desire, because my desire can be for 1,000 lesser things that don't quite fill up. I can dig my empty cisterns that can't hold water because they weren't meant to be, and I just keep getting empty. What if when we're empty, it's not a sign of failure, but a cry for connection? What if when we're tempted to dig our own cisterns that maybe we think will fill us, what we really need is an attuned, compassionate presence of someone else? Hunger and thirst, think what the Lord's saying to me. Hunger, don't hunger and thirst for success or admiration or wealth or ease or pleasurable distractions, but thirst for right relationships. And that right relationship starts in my soul, and that relationship with the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd who comes, and the Good Shepherd who can revive my soul when it's about dead, when I've about stopped breathing. He revives our soul. He restores our soul. What if what I really want is to follow Jesus? And if you want to follow Jesus and the way of Jesus that connects and seeks out those right relationships, if you want to do that, I just want to invite you to go ahead and just open your hands with an open posture. It's a posture of openness to someone else, to being led by someone else, to an attuned, compassionate presence of God, the Jesus that we proclaim Jesus who is Lord. If you want to just open yourself up to his presence, I want to encourage you to open your palms while we do this last prayer of the 23rd Psalm. This one was actually written by Randy Million from two Sundays ago. We did the 23rd Psalm as a prayer, and he rewrote it. We're going to use Randy's words as his closing prayer here. And I may riff on it just a little bit, but receive this prayer and have a posture of openness if it's your desire to have that right relationship with God and other people, to follow the way of Jesus. Lord, you are my protector. I lack for nothing. You give me rest. You help me to be still and know that you are God. You lead me to the quiet places where you calm me and comfort me. You refresh my soul. You lead me the right way. Though I am surrounded, I fear nothing. You are with me. You protect me. You are the one who heals me. You are the one who gives me life. You are the one who fills me and satisfies me. You provide for me always. I am anointed and chosen. I have more than enough. You and your goodness and mercy are mine always. I shall trust in you forever.